former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back. It is our number two of the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. If you missed hour one, you missed a heck of an hour, but you can search it in podcast form. Just search the Lombardi Line wherever you get your podcast. Hour two will be great as well. 30 minutes from now, Rob Guerrera of the 49ers Podcast Network, Gold Standard, will be joining us to break down Niners camp. There's a couple of contracts there in 49er land that they have to sort of get figured out before the start of the regular season. Brandon Ayuk holding in Trent Williams, they're all pro left tackle, holding out. We'll see what the Niners do. We'll get Rob's thoughts on all of that stuff. And what will Brock Purdy look like as he enters year three? He had the best stats of any quarterback last season. EPA per play, QBR, he was the best. What does he have in act number three in store for us this NFL season? But before we get into all of that stuff, let's get to what's on Michael's mind. This one is a training camp favorite of ours as fans of the National Football League.
You know, I love these. Look, I have great respect for the beat writers that cover all these teams out there. But I think one of the things they're doing is they're making work for themselves that is irrelevant. You know, you see it all over. You know, Jalen Hurts is 10 for 10 and 7 on 7. He's 15 for 16 in team period. Like, are we kidding ourselves here? It's not football. And what cracks me up is they promote the quarterback. Aaron Rodgers is sensational. Well, then if he's so good, what's wrong with their defense? Like when you're practicing against yourself, it's give and take. Something's good, then something's bad. Something's really good or something's really bad. Something's just okay. Like you want to walk off the practice field saying, okay, you know, we got a lot of work to do, but we're getting better. But you don't judge the 7-on-7 for the production. You judge it for the reaction. Did he throw the ball to the right guy? Okay, good, let's go. Did they catch it? Who knows? We'll go to the next play. It's ridiculous. And so we're putting bad information into the fans and, of course, building up their excitement towards their team when just relax. Like, we're going to find out. And the preseasons, we're not going to find out. When we get it against team environment, right? When you go against team environment, it's a different game. What we're seeing is card environment. When you're in a card environment, any player can look good. What a card environment means is you look at a card and you do what the card tells you to do. You take away thinking. You take away reaction. Those are easy. When you do that, everybody's better at football. But when you have to think and react, now we find out who the players are. So my advice, what's on my mind, is please ignore it. Like, just ignore it. It's not even noise. It's stupidity is what it is.
It really is, honestly. As fans of the game, and we said, like, this, like, we love to consume football content. We love it. We created football content ourselves, but we also love other people's football content because we love the sport. But it's really jumped the shark on tracking statistics in training camp, which is, like, some drills, there's a clear purpose of, hey, we want you to do this or we want you to do that. That's not how games actually function. The game is, all right, go out there and make some plays and try to win. Practice, you're actually working on specific things. So you really shouldn't be taking away things statistically from what you're seeing. And if you've never been to a football practice, literally, like, the coach will be holding up a card that has the plays on it to tell everybody what they're supposed to do. Like, that's what Michael means by the card environment. Like, it's up there and it's very scripted and it's controlled, which is why, like, as an old school football fan, like, I do miss the days where guys used to play in the preseason, you know, because, like, we'd actually get to see, like, game like stuff. You wouldn't see the entire playbook because people wanted to save stuff for the regular season, but you actually got to see them going against another team in full speed, uncontrolled environment where the quarterback could be tackled and sacked versus, like, even though we get the inter squad scrimmages or the joint practices, they're not going to hit the quarterback. Otherwise, you'll get into a fight or you get tossed out of practice. So I do think that the element of the preseason being gone is a little bit of a bummer, but some teams like the Kansas City Chiefs, who all they do is win the Super Bowl every year, they still participate in the preseason. Maybe some of these other teams should take note of that and adjust the way that they go about this thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, you have to get your offensive and defensive line. Look, the Eagles have changed dramatically their practice schedule. You know, they hired a new team doctor, Peter DeLuca, who was with them when before. They fired all their strength and conditioning people from last year. Their team was out of shape. And so now this year, you know, they are changing how they practice because of what happened to them last year. You know, when you go through Philadelphia, and it's undeniable, yes, they lack some talent defensively, and yes, you could say their coaching was poor, but when you break down their numbers in the fourth quarter of the season, when you look at what they were not able to accomplish, I mean, they were ranked 30th in the league in points in the fourth quarter. They were 24th in sack percentage last year, down at 6.3. The year before, they were led the league at 11 sack percentage. I mean, their conditioning was horrendous last year, and they're addressing it. Now, the question's going to come for Dallas, for Philadelphia, to have enough team speed on defense. Can they create turnovers? Is Zach Braun a good linebacker? Can Devin White reach another level? We will see. But this team gave up 131 points in the fourth quarter last year. And because of that, the conditioning was an issue. So training camp does matter. When you leave training camp, you should be in good shape. The problem is the season's so long, you can get out of shape quickly. Your pad level can get higher, and all of a sudden, you're not as good at playing football. That's why Zach Taylor is 0-4 in the first two games the last 2 years, because he doesn't take camp as seriously because he wants to build during the season. It's worked out for him in 2 years when he went to the Super Bowl 1 year and the conference championship the next. But Andy Reid's strategy is, look, I'm going to build this team hard. It's going to be a hard camp. We're going to have hard practices. Everybody's going to take, Mahomes is going to take all the reps. We're going to prepare it. We may not play in the game, but we're scrimmaging against other teams, and we're going to know our team. The other part is it's hard to evaluate talent on the team if you don't practice.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard to really evaluate your team. Like, how do you know you're any good if you don't practice hard enough? You really never get that sense.
Yeah, and the thing is that the Chiefs, they actually played their guys in the preseason. I remember I was watching preseason last year. Mahomes is out there week two of preseason. He's playing like a quarter. So it's interesting that they go about it that way versus the way that other teams do it. I am glad that you brought up Cincinnati, though, because yesterday Mike Palm and I were doing the Lombardi line, and we had Charlie Goldsmith on, who covers the Bengals for the Cincinnati Inquirer. And we asked him, like, hey, what are they doing to try to prevent the slow starts that they've had in years past? And he said that this season, Zach Taylor is actually going to play his starters throughout the preseason. So it looks like the Bengals are going to change their philosophy from kind of the, all right, we're not going to play guys, but they're actually going to play this year. We'll see how that works out for them.
Well, they have to, Femi. You can't dig an 0-2 hole every year and try to get out of it in a competitive North. I mean, Pittsburgh's going to be a better team, right? Now, Russell Wilson's been hurt with this calf injury. He's missed 3 days of practice. We'll see when he comes back. But the vibe coming out of Pittsburgh is very positive in terms of their team, how they feel about it. Forget what the fans think, because, I mean, there's lines down the street to get into their practices. So we know that. Okay, we think the Browns will be an improved team. They've got everything they need on their team to be good. Whether their defense can play well on the road or not, we'll see. And then, of course, you got the Baltimore Ravens, who you can't completely ignore, even though they're going through a bunch of changes, offensive line, defensive coaching staff. That all said, you can't dig a 0-2 hole and think you're going to get out of it in the AFC. It's too competitive. And I think Zach Taylor finally, where Mike Brown has said, Zach, I think we got to change our approach. If we don't get this offensive line in shape and we don't get – I mean, I saw Trent Brown and Mims walk out to practice, huge men. They could be really good at right tackle if they can get either one of those guys to play at a high level. But you're going to risk your quarterback's health if they don't.
Yeah, and we're hoping that Joe Burrow can get through training camp with no hiccups or anything. A couple years ago, the appendectomy. Last year, it was the calf injury. They started off slow, got a little bit hot towards Halloween, but then Burrow ultimately got injured with the wrist injury, and then it was sort of season over for Cincinnati. I do want to ask you, though, about the San Francisco 49ers, because they have the two contracts. Brandon Ayuk wants the deal. He's been kind of kicking and screaming about that all offseason, but he did show up to camp. He's holding in. Trent Williams, quiet all throughout the offseason, did not show up to camp. He wants a new deal. He's a holdout. So what we talked about earlier this week, and we encourage everyone to check it out on our recent podcast of the GM Shuffle, a recent episode, we just released it on Thursday. You discuss in depth GM modeling and how, as a general manager, you have to model the team moving forward and say, if we do this, what does our team look like? If we don't do this, what does the team look like? How do the 49ers sort of model their team with Ayuk and Williams wanting contracts, but also looking down the line of Brock Purdy needing the deal as early as maybe even next offseason?
Well, the one thing about when you model the 49ers, they can remove a salary. They'll end up removing Debo's salary eventually down the line at some point, right? Trent Williams, they know they need to get a left tackle, but for him, he's a priority they have to sign. And then, of course, they drafted Pearsall, that maybe they could remove Ayuk's contract if they feel like they find somebody else. I mean, they love Ayuk, but they know Ayuk is – they found Ayuk, they can find another one. And I think that's what you have to do. See, the thing that bothers me most about Hard Knocks is Hard Knocks, the fans love it. But to me, Hard Knocks is an embarrassment to somebody who's been in the profession before, because what it does, what Joe Shane has done, is he's made the guy who sits at Biggie's Bar in North Jersey think he's a general manager, because that's how he makes decisions. Sign this guy, sign that guy, sign that guy. When we know that to be a general manager, you have to model. You have to say, if I sign this, here's what I have. But to me, where no one questions Shane's inability to be a general manager is, if you sign Daniel Jones and you franchise Barkley, you should know what your team looks like in 25. You should know what your team looks like in 24. And then how do you build pieces around them? You can't decide on a contract in 22 and then in 23 say it's too expensive and 24 you don't want them. You got to make that decision as a total element, as everything. You signed Brian Burns and paid him all this money. Did anybody ask if we signed Leonard Floyd and this? If we signed three players for the price of Burns, then we still keep our two. And now what does our team look like? That's general managing. But just, hey, would you want to sign Burns? And they, oh, of course I want to sign Burns. Okay, well, we don't have any money if we sign Burns. Oh, okay. Like, that's amateur hour at Dixie. Like, any guy at Biggie Sports Bar can do that. Mm-hmm. Like, anybody can do it. That's why the fans think they're doing good, because, well, they're filling all their needs. No, the fans have never been involved with how to build a team in a cap era. You don't just sign. You have to model. That's, to me, the biggest problem.
Playing Madden. You know, we know the new Madden game's about to come out. We're playing Madden up there in Jersey with the New York Giants. And it's been entertaining. But like you mentioned, for people who've been in the league, it's been rather cringeworthy to watch what's happening in the offseason Hard Knocks version for the New York Giants. All right, we'll get to some of the blue chip, red chip, premier pass rushers in the NFL next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hey, it's a big week here at the network because we're releasing our VSiN College Football Betting Guide this Thursday. This guide is your ultimate resource for the upcoming college football season, including previews of all 134 teams, a preseason top 25, power ratings, proven betting systems, and more. Sign up before the end of July and receive both the college football and NFL betting guides, plus full VSiN Pro access to our daily pro picks, 24/7 video, exclusive data like our betting splits all the way through the Super Bowl at an early bird discount price of just $175. July ends on Wednesday, folks. Get on this deal. Sign up for our monthly subscription and get your first 30 days for only $19 to see everything VSiN has to up your betting game. Don't miss out on these preseason deals. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up today. Man, where has the year gone, Michael? We're already in the second half of 2024. Wow. Like August 1st is on Thursday. This thing has flown by, man.
Femi, I know. It's great. Springsteen's on the 23rd of August. I can't wait for that. Comes back to America. There we go.
There you go. Got
that. I did Chris Russo yesterday. On Friday, I drove up to Lake Como, not the one in Italy, the one in the great state of New Jersey here.
It'd be impressive Mad if you drove
Dog
to Italy.
Was doing his Mad Dog was doing his radio show from a bar up there and had a good time. And I was getting heckled by Giant fans. They're like, you hate the Giants, Lombardi, you hate the Giants. And I said, look, your win percentage since Tom Coughlin is 36%. You should hate the Giants. Like, you should be yelling at me. Like, here's what I don't understand. If you're critiquing a team and you're being honest about their team who hasn't won, who's a 36% win percentage team, you don't hate the team. If I were saying that the Chiefs are no good or pretending that, you know, a good team is not, then then you could say, okay, you just hate that team. But the reality of it is when you're talking about bad teams, historically bad teams who've been through four coaches, how can you say you hate the team? I'm just reporting on what we're seeing. You're just oblivious.
It's 100%. Well, also too, like, fans are not rational. And I say this as somebody who is a fan of the Dallas Cowboys, like no fan is rational. And I think fans almost see their teams as like, this is my child. So like, I can talk bad about my child, but damn it, you better not talk bad about my child. I think that's kind of how they see it. So then they hear you you're being 100% honest about the New York Giants, but you know, it hits different when it's somebody outside of the family circle criticizing the child, which is the New York Giants. So I think that's kind of how they see it. Like, oh, you're just a hater. It's like you mentioned, you should be a hater of this, because why would you love this? This team has sucked for like 6-7 years. Like, put pressure on the organization
to
be better.
Don't yell at me. Yell at John Mara. Exactly. Yell at John. You got Bill Belichick sitting out there. I mean, don't yell at me. I mean, you do something. I mean, you know, oh, we signed this guy. That's going to make – I mean, it's such classic sports. We signed this guy. I mean, I've lived through it watching NBA teams. Oh, if we sign this guy, we're going to be better. No, you're not. You have no identity as a team. Like, the fact that you gave away your best player after you franchised him tells me you have no planning. And then your head coach is sitting there with his feet up on a desk not respecting the job. I mean, come on. What I want to know, Femi, is what's on the cutting room floor? If they're showing us this, what's on the cutting room floor?
The deleted scenes. What does that look like? I would love to see it.
I got to get the deleted scenes. I got to go up to NFL Films to get the deleted scenes. I'd love that.
Who do we got to call? Is it Liev Schreiber? He's the narrator for this whole deal. Like, do we got to call him? There's somebody that we can call to get the deleted scenes, because like you mentioned, Brian Daboll talking to multiple NFL draft prospects at the time, just, you know, sitting back as if he's playing video games and chilling, got the feet up.
Like, he's won 4 Super Bowls. Like, seriously, have some decorum. Even when his owners were in there, he's got his feet up on his desk. I mean, if Al Davis caught you with your hands in your pocket, you would get a reprimand. You know, he would kill you. Well, get your hands out of your pocket. Like, you know, it's like, come on.
And what's crazy is that it wasn't even his office. He was doing this in Joe Shane's office. Like, it's one thing to, hey, if you want to kick it like that in your own office or whatever, do what you want to do. But, like, this is not even your office. And you got your feet up on Joe Shane's ottoman or the coffee table or whatever. it's New York Giants Hard Knocks has been a riot, man. I hope it never ends. I know we're going to get the Bears one starting maybe next week or so. But this Giants one has been it's been great entertainment for us throughout the July months here in the NFL. Just real quick on the Olympic basketball, we are underway, USA and Serbia. Your guy Embiid starting. He's playing. So he's not ducking Jokic outside of Philly. We were starting to wonder, because he was sick. He didn't practice the other day, but he is playing as a Kevin Durant.
I mean, he never practices. Come on. I mean, he hates to practice. Come on. You know, I mean, I can't wait to see his numbers. How many minutes will he play? Seriously, they're going to get to Anthony Davis. That's why I asked JVT in the last hour, what's the best starting five here? You know, he's hard to play with. As talented as Embiid is, he's hard to play with. I think America will see that. As a 76er fan, you say that and you say, well, yes, he's very talented, but he's a ball hog, he's a chucker, and you've got to run, and he's not in the low post, so it's hard to space the floor with him.
Yeah.
And he doesn't run the floor. I mean, Jokic will run him right in the tank.
Oh, 100%. And I think a lot of people have started to notice that this season, like following along with the Team USA, the ball is not moving when Embiid is on the floor. Like he is a black hole. Like
he never does.
As talented as he is, he likes to hold the ball, do his thing, kind of pump fake, whatever, at the elbow 15 feet out and then shoot those jumpers, which he's perfected those jumpers. But on this team, especially with the coach being Steve Kerr, where he's coming from that ball movement system, he wants the ball to move. It can't be sticking around. It's a weird fit with Joel Embiid, and it's been a weird fit so far as Serbia out to a 10-2 lead here in the early going of this Olympic game. So we'll see what goes on. I'm sure Team USA will be fine, but if you were catching those points and you took the 14 or 13 and a half, at least 2.5 minutes in, you're feeling all right with Serbia and how they're playing right now with Nikola Jokic. But let's get to, though, before we end this segment, our blue chip and red chip edge rushers. This is an exercise that we've done all throughout this offseason. We've been doing it on the GM Shuffle podcast. Once again, we encourage everybody to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast. But I think it's a fun exercise, not just as football fans, but also as bettors as well, to kind of, before the season starts, who are the premier players at each position that you need to kind of hone in on and know about when you're making these bets. So, of course, when guys ultimately miss some time. And your red chip edge rushers, you have Josh Hines-Allen of the Jacksonville Jaguars, Bryce Huff with the Eagles, used to be with the New York Jets, Khalil Mack with the Chargers, Danielle Hunter comes over from Minnesota, now in Houston, and then Aiden Hutchinson, who's entering year 3 with the Detroit Lions.
Hutchinson was really good. He improved. He wasn't on the list last year. He didn't have enough hurries. This year he's got 33 quarterback hits, which is almost tied for the head of the league. TJ Watt led the league with 36. Parsons had 33 as well. And, you know, a lot of this, too, when you're dealing with Hutchinson, is can we play from in front? That's what makes T.J. Watt, 19 sacks, 36 quarterback hits, so damn impressive, is because rarely did Pittsburgh ever play from in front. The games were always tight. He could never really peel back and rush. So, look, I think to me, one of the things you have to have, one of the reasons why I'm concerned about predicting the Falcons to be the team to come out of the South in the NFC, is they don't have anybody in their front seven who can rush the passer. And for me, I was educated by Coach Walsh, and I was taught that to become a good team, you had to have a quarterback and a rusher, you know, and then you fill in those pieces after that. You got it, because in the fourth quarter, if you have a lead, you got to be able to rush the passer. You have to have somebody that the defense has to handle and take away from the game. It's one of the reasons why the Raiders were effective last year. In fact, considering that they beat Kansas City and didn't complete a pass after the first quarter, because their pressure from Kuntz, from all their players, Wilson inside, mm-hmm. and then, of course, the great Max Crosby, created problems for Kansas City. So that, to me, is the key to football. All this talk about coverage, coverage, coverage. The only way you're going to stop a good quarterback is through pass rush and through these edges.
Yeah, you got to get in those guys' faces. You mentioned Max Crosby. He is on the blue chip list. The blue chips, those are the elite guys, the cream of the crop at the position. And Max Crosby is up there for the Las Vegas Raiders. Nick Bosa, a former defensive player of the year for the Niners. Micah Parsons for the Cowboys. T.J. Watt, another former defensive player of the year for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And then the reigning defensive player of the year, Myles Garrett of the Cleveland Browns.
I did not think Bosa was as good as he was 2 years ago. I thought Bosa wasn't the same player. I thought, to me, their defensive front didn't help him as much. Armstead, you know, when they were really good inside and had other pressure from the outside, I think we'll see if that changes in terms of having Leonard Floyd on the team over there opposite of Bosa. Hargrave was not healthy all year long, which affected him. I think that did. You know, they signed the kid from Houston to play inside as well. We'll see if that Malik Collins, if that works out. So, you know, we need to figure that one out. But I mean, look, Parsons is incredible. Now he has Christian Wilkins to play next to him. I mean, Wilkins's numbers last year as a defensive tackle, he'll be a blue chip defensive tackle. So you're putting two blue chip players next to one another. Blue chip tackle, blue chip rusher, and Crosby. That's going to create some issues. If Tyree Wilson comes along with Kuntz, those four guys will be able to really rush the passer. The problem is, are they ever going to get the lead on anybody? That's going to be the hard part for the Raiders. But the strength of the Raiders is their front.
How much of Bosa not being as good as he was in years past was about the contract negotiations he had going on this time last year?
I think a lot of it was, but I think also they didn't have the depth to keep him fresh.
Yeah. He was obviously still a really good player this past season, but 2 years ago, he was an absolute monster as he won Defensive Player of the Year. He got his contract from the Niners. Will Brandon Ayuk and Trent Williams get their contracts from the Niners? We'll ask Rob Guerrera next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Timmy Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line, hanging out with you guys on a Sunday. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. I'm hanging out here in downtown Las Vegas. Training camps underway across the National Football League, all 32 teams. It's back to football weekend across the league. We got pads coming on, and to help us break down 49ers training camp, the defending NFC champions, we're bringing in Rob Guerrera on the Progressive Line. Rob Guerrera of Gold Standard 49ers Podcast Network. Also have the YouTube page, Gold Standard 49ers Podcast Network. Rob, thanks for hanging out with us and waking up with us this morning here. The Niners obviously have these contracts that they have to figure out. Brandon Ayuk holding in, Trent Williams holding out. How do you think that impacts this team this fall? They have another big win total, 11.5. The market expects them to be the favorites to go ahead and represent the NFC once again. Could these contracts perhaps derail those expectations?
It's certainly not going to help. And we have seen this with the 49ers before. We saw it with Deebo Samuel and Nick Bosa. Both guys talked about how the contract situations negatively affected them once they started playing in the regular season. You would think the 49ers would want to show some urgency to get this done, but apparently right now they haven't, and they risk that happening again at two very important spots on this offense.
Don't you feel, though, Rob, that, I mean, they realize the value of Trent Williams? I think it's just really going to come down to they know they have to do something with him. And I think the Ayuk deal is hard because they've offered him a good contract. I just don't think they're in agreement on where they see Ayuk. But I would get the sense, and correct me if I'm wrong, that they should be able to get the Trent Williams deal done rather sooner rather than later.
I completely agree with you. We've seen them act quickly when they want to, right? Christian McCaffrey's deal got done at lightning speed because they recognize the importance that he has within this offense. I think the same thing applies to Trent Williams. And also, it's a little bit different situation with Brandon Ayuk. He's on the fifth-year option. They have an offer to him that would give him a raise even beyond that. So they feel like they're done right by Brandon Ayuk. He can take it or not take it. That's up to him. But I think the 49ers feel like, we've done all we can for you. You decide what you're going to decide. With Trent Williams, they know they need to take care of him. He's been eclipsed by multiple other left tackles in the league since he signed his contract. He deserves to be the highest paid player or highest paid tackle, excuse me. And I think they will get that done sooner rather than later.
Yeah, we saw Christian Darrisaw sign that big extension with the Minnesota Vikings earlier this week. I'm sure if you're Trent Williams and his agent, you're saying, hey, like, as good as Darrisaw is, I am the best guy in the league. So go ahead and pay me like it. We're hanging out with Rob Guerrera here on the Progressive Guest Line. Rob, of course, of the Gold Standard 49ers Podcast Network. Where does the Brock Purdy eventual contract play into this whole thing here? Because next year, Purdy will be eligible. They could do him next year. They could do it the year after that. How do you think the Niners are sort of trying to, I guess, plan for that and sort of fit these contracts around ultimately paying their quarterback, which is likely going to be $60+ million after what we've seen with Jordan Love and Tua earlier this weekend?
That's the whole Rubik's Cube of this whole thing, right? Every move that you make affects every other move that you can make. Nothing happens in a vacuum. And so the 49ers do have to plan for all of that. I think they're in a great situation this year because they cannot touch Brock Purdy's contract, even if they wanted to, which, by the way, I think they do. But they get a whole other year to see how this plays out, and then they can make their moves, which is why this season is setting up very much as sort of a last dance for the 49ers, because it's very unlikely that you're going to be able to sign Trent Williams to a new contract like they have, sign Christian McCaffrey like they have Deebo Samuel at the salary he's making, possibly re-sign Brandon Ayuk to a new contract. You can't pay all of these people. And so depending on how this season plays out, because they know they have the Brock Purdy contract looming, they are going to have to make some very, very difficult decisions after 2024.
Where do you think Deebo Samuels fits in those decisions, Rob?
Good question, because they absolutely love him. But the problem with Deebo Samuel is, one, availability. You don't know how much he's going to be out there. He missed almost the entire Packers playoff game. He also got hurt in the Super Bowl. And it seems like every other season he shows up in shape. You don't know which Deebo Samuel you're going to get. This year, by all reports, he looks fantastic. But if I'm going to have to pay a guy near the top of the market, I want to know what I am getting in there. So as much as they like him, I'm not sure they think they can count on him going forward. Deebo himself even said this year he knew what he was getting into when he signed his contract. I think in his heart of hearts, he knows this could very well be his last year with the 49ers.
Yeah, I mean, this crew of Ayuk, Deebo, McCaffrey, Kittle, this looks like you mentioned, it could be the last dance for all of those guys being on this 49ers offense. But they did replenish at that wide receiver position, drafting Ricky Pearsall out of Florida. Ricky Pearsall, though, has been dealing with this hamstring injury. I saw Shanahan saying that he thinks that maybe as early as Monday, he might be able to get back out there. What do they have in this first round rookie wide receiver?
What I think they're hoping they have is someone closer to Brandon Ayuk, someone that can get separation, that can get away from good man coverage, that's going to be healthy and available. Not someone like Deebo Samuel, who's a little more dependent on Kyle Shanahan to sort of get him open. Now, Pearsall is not the player after the catch that Deebo is, or even Brandon Ayuk is, frankly. But I think they're hoping they have another guy that can be a dependable target for them, especially after 2024, when either Ayuk or Deebo might not be there.
You know, one of the things I think that was clear last year, they played about 10, especially in the Super Bowl, they played way more plays than they typically do on defense. You know, typically this team averages about 32 minutes with the football. Their defense plays about 28 minutes per game. But because of the overtime and the way it went, do you feel like this team has enough depth in their defensive front? Because last year, with Hargrave's injury, Armstead not playing as well, Chase Young being a disaster at right end, that they weren't the same defensive front as they were 2 years ago?
I completely agree. And I think they agree. And they kind of have overhauled their defensive line. You know, Eric Armstead is not there. They signed Yetur Gross-Matos. Jordan Elliott they acquired. They recognized that that was an area where they had to get better this offseason because it wasn't the same, especially against the run is where they really, really struggled. And you could see it in the playoff games as well. They recognize the need. They've tried to overhaul it. They have Nick Sorensen now as their defensive coordinator, who they believe will sort of get them back to basics and back to the fundamentals of what they do. We'll see how that actually works out. But that's the story that they are trying to sell you in San Francisco.
You know, it was interesting. After the NFC title game, we heard Lions head coach Dan Campbell talk about how, hey, guys, we might never get back to this spot ever again. This might be the best that it ever is. The Niners went all the way up to the top of the mountain. Fortunately, they lost to Patrick Mahomes again in the Super Bowl. But they're now plus 250 to win the NFC and repeat as conference champions. The betting market sees there being a big gap between the Niners and the rest of the conference, whether it's the Detroit Lions, the Eagles, Cowboys, Packers, etc. Is that how you see it heading into this season? Is it the Niners again? Gap than the rest of the competition?
I do see it that way. And if you just look and didn't know that the Niners lost in the Super Bowl last year and just looked at the rosters are still largely the same, especially on offense. The Niners are bringing everybody back. They scored 60 touchdowns last year. No other offense scored more. They still have Kyle Shanahan. There is no reason this team can't go back to the Super Bowl. Now, is it going to be easy? Certainly not. They play 8 games at a rest disadvantage this year. That's the most in NFL history. So it's going to be a tough climb, but they have the team, they have the coaching to do it.
Yeah, there's no question that they can. Who do you see as their main competitor? The Rams, an improved Seattle team, or do you think it's Philadelphia?
I don't think it's either one of those teams. I think it's either the Lions or the Packers as their main competitor in the NFC. The Rams are certainly good, and I think the Rams have improved. But the loss of Aaron Donald, I think, really hurts there. And let's face it, Kyle Shanahan kind of has had Sean McVay's number for the most part. I know the Rams won the NFC title game, but for the most part, Kyle Shanahan has handled Sean McVay. I think it's either the Lions, who are still very strong on the offensive line and can hurt the 49ers where they're weakest, or the Packers in Jordan Love, who it appears could be their biggest quarterback competition in the conference.
So do you think it's just injuries that could potentially derail this season? Like if the Niners don't get back to Super Bowl, is it injuries going to be the reason why?
I think so. Almost every year in Kyle Shanahan's tenure, they've been a top 10 most injured team. Now, last year, they were one of the healthiest. They were the fourth healthiest team in the NFL last year, and they got to the Super Bowl. Kyle Shanahan is the only coach other than Andy Reid that can say, last 3 times my quarterback has been healthy for every single game, I've gone to the Super Bowl. He did it with Matt Ryan. He did it with Jimmy Garoppolo, and now he did it with Brock Purdy. So if they can stay healthy, there is no reason why they can't get right back to the big game.
Yeah, I agree. They certainly, but staying healthy. Do you think they'll use, real quick, we've got to run, McCaffrey less in the beginning of the year to save him for the final run?
They've talked about that. Kyle Shanahan specifically has said they'd like to lighten the load on Christian McCaffrey. They certainly have the running back depth to do it. And now I think they trust Brock Purdy to throw a little more if they need to.
Awesome stuff. Big expectations for the 49ers, but maybe they're going to be the team that goes ahead and exceeds those expectations. We could talk about them in New Orleans in the Super Bowl later this upcoming February. He is Rob Guerrera. Check him out over on Twitter at StatsOnFire. Of course, Gold Standard 49ers Podcast Network, as well as the YouTube page. Rob, we thank you for joining us, and we appreciate the time, man. Be well.
Thanks for having me. Anytime.
Good stuff there from Rob Guerrera, who joined us on the Progressive Guest Line. Yeah, Michael, Niners plus 250. To win the NFC. That's a short number, but it's when you look at the roster, it's hard to argue against it if they're able to stay healthy.
No, if that defensive front plays to the level, it can't play the way it did last year. It really can't.
Yeah, the run defense was pretty porous in the playoffs, but by hook or crook, they found a way to get to the Super Bowl, ultimately falling to Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. We'll wrap up the show with some NFL headlines next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Timmy Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If
haven't already, check out Mike Somich's article over on VSiN.com, creating your own NFL power ratings for handicapping. That's some useful tools that you can get ahead of the NFL regular season, which is right around the corner. Check it out and much more today over at VSiN.com. Welcome back. This is the final segment of the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey, Femi Abebefe hanging out here in downtown Las Vegas. Thank you to Rob Guerrera, who joined us in the last segment. Rob, of course, of the Gold Standard 49ers Podcast Network. Make sure you check that out, as well as their YouTube page for all things 49ers. Rob did a great job breaking down the Niners with us here. Michael, have you been starting to make your power ratings? I know you have your numbers, you have your power rating numbers and all that stuff. Like, where are you at in that process as we're a little more than a month away from the start of the regular season?
I am, you know, I'm going through it. I've just finished going through every team's questions for the preseason. So I like to kind of, before I go with the power rankings, I have last year's power rankings as they ended the season. I've had their team needs along with their draft kind of fill that in. But what I like to do is go through the first couple of weeks of preseason, maybe not so much the games as what the practices are, and then come up with where I think the teams have answered those questions. Because it's one thing to think you've got it made, you've got it handled. It's another thing to see it on the field. You know, the Jets, we call them the ifers, and they do look good. They look like they've got a good team if they stay healthy, and that's going to affect their power ranking.
100%. Like, all these unanswered questions that, like, we can answer some of them, but you're not going to really be able to answer it, all of them, until we actually see the real games being played in September. But the preseason maybe can give us a little bit of a glimpse as what we should expect to see this fall with the NFL regular season. Real quick, before we get into some NFL headlines, Team USA is up by 8 against Serbia, 35-27, 6:40 left to go in the second quarter. So after a slow start, they've kind of gotten their feet under them. Kevin Durant, he looks terrific. I just saw him knock down a three as we were coming back from break. So the embarrassment of riches to the Stars and Stripes. Yeah, very rested. He's got his legs back. And the reason why we're minus 500 to win the gold medal, because we're pretty darn good at this basketball thing. But JBT said, look out for Germany. That could be a team that potentially is along the pathway to gold, as Germany won the FIBA World Cup last year. But all right, let's get to some NFL headlines before we get out of here. Cincinnati Bengals training camp, there's always something coming out of Cincinnati, and this year it is Ja'Marr Chase, their wide receiver, who is not participating in training camp practices. Now, Zach Taylor has said it's all part of the plan. What that means, I'm not sure. But to me, at least on the outside, Michael, it looks like this might be one of those hold-in situations, as Ja'Marr Chase is one of those wide receivers that is eligible for a contract extension.
Well, here's the thing you have to understand. Mike Brown came out and said he's our second best player and we fully intend to make it worth his while. And so I think that's clear. When Mike Brown says something, I think Mike Brown has a reputation for being cheap. I don't think Mike Brown's cheap. I think Mike Brown doesn't want to overpay for mediocrity, which is frugal, which is smart. But Mike Brown doesn't mind paying for greatness. And Chase is great. So is Burrow. And he's paid for both those. He's paid for Burrow. He made him the highest paid quarterback in the league. I think he's going to make Chase the highest paid receiver in the league, and how he does it and what he does. So there doesn't seem to be any hostility. Usually when it comes to Bengals negotiation, there's always a lot of conflict. You know, the team's cheap. Look, they are. I mean, they charge, you know, for soft drinks in the players' facility. I mean, this isn't like they're giving stuff away there. You know, they're not like a lot of teams. But when it comes time to pay Chase, I think they're going to pay Chase. And I think the reason he's there is because Mike Brown has made a commitment to get him signed.
So do you think that this is just something that is a matter of when and not if this upcoming training camp? Like, and who knows? They might not even be talking about the money. It could just be talking about the language of the contract right now, which is holding this thing up, and maybe it gets done. Okay.
Yeah, I think there's no question. I mean, we've said this back in March that the month of July, as we enter training camp, the way you have to build up, the way you can't start in pads to practice, a lot of this is going to be the reconfiguration of existing contracts to conform with the free agency. No one, including Joe Shane, anticipated the cap was going to go up this much. Mm-hmm. And now there's an adjustment that has to take place. And those adjustments are reflected in the players who are sitting out there saying, what about me? You know, one of the things when you're in that free agent market, we talked about it with the New York Football Giants last year. It's the disease of me. Yeah. You pay one guy the wrong number, everybody else has got their hand out. So I think Mike Brown knows he has to take care of Chase. I think he's planned for this. I think Mike Brown has modeled it to what it looks like and what it's going to look like in 3 years. That's why they let Tyler Boyd go. And he went to Cincinnati on a very modest contract. But Mike Brown wasn't going to waste any money on Tyler Boyd. He needed to move on from Tyler Boyd. He was going to insert a rookie contract in there. See, there's the things that even though Boyd was reasonable, you say, well, why wouldn't they have signed Boyd? His number came way down. Well, because they put a rookie deal in there, which was a second-year player, you know, and they put his contract in there, and they drafted a receiver. So they're going to try. That's how you build a team.
Yeah, you guys have those alternatives. We talk about second-order thinking, Cincinnati Bengals exercising that. Some teams in the NFL, they might not be. One team that I think is really fascinating this year, and on the GM shuffle, we had their general manager on earlier this summer. That was Chris Ballard, GM of the Indianapolis Colts. I think that the Colts, their quarterback, Anthony Richardson, might be the most volatile player this upcoming season. The projections might be really, really good, or they could be really, really bad. We don't know because we've only seen four games of play. We've seen the glimpses, and we also saw what he did at college in Florida. That Utah game always stands out to us here on the Lombardi Line, where it's like, whoa, this guy is legit. But can he stay healthy? That was the question to head coach Shane Steichen earlier this week at training camp of, hey, will you cut back on maybe running Anthony Richardson in hopes to hopefully make him stay healthy on the field? Well, here's what Shane Steichen had to say about that.
You haven't had a ton of practices like this with Anthony and Jonathan Taylor together. So yeah. Just as the play designer, just kind of how intrigued are you to have so many practices to build that thing out on?
Well, I think it's exciting because the playbook is open to everything. You know, you got a quarterback that can do everything. He can throw it from the pocket. He can get out of the pocket. He can run the football. And then you got Jonathan Taylor, who's one of the best backs in the league. And to have both those guys in the backfield is going to be critical for our success. You know, people ask this too a lot. It's just like, hey, how are you going to limit the run game? And I kind of think like, shoot, are you going to limit Steph Curry from, you know, shooting three pointers? Well, that's one of Anthony's strengths, right? So we're not going to, you know, get away from that. That's what he does well.
They're not getting away from it, Michael. They said, hey, like, yeah, like we know the injury history and the concerns, but the reason why we drafted him is the combination of the passing and running.
Right. And the fact that, look, he, you know, Josh Allen's a big man. He hasn't gotten hurt. He's been able to stay. And I think this kid's young, right? He needs to understand the pace of the game, the speed of the game. My question's about the Colts, and I like them. I do. I think they have a good team. But last year, the question you have to ask yourself, can they stop a good passing team? I mean, Carr threw for 350 against them. Stroud, 337. Matt Stafford, over 300. Aiden O'Connell threw for 286 against them. Jake Browning threw for 274 against him. Will Levis threw for 259 against him. I mean, to me, what happens when they find when they play the Mahomes, the great passers, the Allens, are they going to be able to play good enough defense? And Latua will certainly help them. But let's put things in real perspective here. They were 22nd in points per play allowed. One spot ahead of, you know who, Femi? The Chicago Bears, who also run the same exact defense of the Colts, right? It's a defense that's obsolete. So they're 22nd. The Colts were 22nd. The Bears are 23rd. If their front, and this applies to the Bears too, if their front doesn't dominate, these quarterbacks, even mediocre ones, which I just cited, whether it's Browning or Levis or Aiden O'Connell couldn't pass for anything against a good coordinator, but he's 286 against them. If they don't stop the forward pass by scheme, not by talent, they're going to have a hard time. And I'll keep saying this.
Yeah, that might be the Achilles heel of the Indianapolis Colts. And maybe this could be a team that if you're betting out there, maybe you like to bet some Colts overs on their games, because the offense, I think a lot of people feel good about that, what Shane Steichen can do as an offensive mind. Now you add Richardson back into the fold. But defensively, what Gus Bradley's been doing, it's left a lot to be desired on that side of the football there. The win total sitting at 8.5. I'm looking at their schedule right now. They start off week one and week two. Stroud and Jordan Love are the quarterbacks that they're playing. And you read off those numbers there. Stroud threw for 337. Love might throw for another 330 if that's what they continue to do on that side of the ball on defense for the Indianapolis Colts. But I think it's a team that I've had trouble kind of handicapping them just because I keep coming back to what are we going to get from Richardson? Are we going to get the really, really good stuff? And we can extrapolate that over the course of an 18-game season. Or is he kind of one of those yeah, but guys? I think that is kind of the dichotomy that we have here with the Colts. Before we get out of here, let folks know what's going on with Team USA. They're up 43-36 against Serbia. We got 3 minutes left to go in the second quarter. Kevin Durant has not missed a shot, Michael. So he's definitely well-rested as he is pretty good. But
there we go.
I'm going to go and watch this game, the second half at least, when I head home.
I know you are. You're into it.
We'll be dialed in. I got to get you the full Embiid report for the shuffle tomorrow.
When did they take him out? It took him out about 4 minutes into the game, I'm sure.
He's in right now, so we'll see how long he remains
exhausted,
in.
I'm sure. Exhausted.
Enjoy the rest of your Sunday, Michael.
Thanks, Ben.